Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Deadline for late summer registration is September 22nd. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll meet Morgan Russell. She's training to run her first marathon. Always an incredible feat, but even greater for Russell because she lives with type 1 diabetes. But first, as Iowa has become more diverse, teaching English language learners has become a vital part of what our schools do. According to the Department of Education, students in Iowa collectively speak more than 200 languages. In some communities, like Denison, Iowa, more than half of the student population is made up of English language learners. So how well are we serving these students? What are the challenges? We're going to start with a snapshot of ELL students in one school in the Waterloo District. Anna Fix is an ELL teacher at George Washington Carver Academy, a middle school in Waterloo, a district where approximately 10% of students are English language learners. Hello, Anna.
Hi, good afternoon.
Anna, give me a snapshot of the students you work with right now. How many ELL students do you work with?
Well, right now we have about maybe 52 students for the whole 6, 7, and 8 classes. Most of the teachers that teach the ELL students are in a co-teaching program, and so that's how we work with them.
Okay, explain what co-teaching means for English language learners.
Yes, what that means is that I work with another teacher. In my case specifically, I support with writing and reading literacy, and that means that I accommodate the students in do variations on the classes depending on the needs. Each student is evaluated by a test that is provided by the state. It's called the ELPA 21 Screamer or the ELPA 21 testing, depending on, you know, what time of the year they arrive. And in that test, give us the ability to find out where they are at in their language knowledge or acquisition.
How large a school is George Washington Carver Academy?
Our school runs about 500 and some students. You know, it's in the middle. It's not too large, but it's not too small either.
All right. So about 10% of your students are English language learners.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me a little bit about where your students are coming from.
Some of the students come from Spanish-speaking countries. We have students that come from Honduras, from Guatemala, from Mexico. We have students that are coming also from South America, from Colombia. We have students that are from the Marshall Islands, Vietnam, the Pacific Islands. We have some students from Congo. And that's pretty much the variety that we have.
There's so many different languages being spoken in your classrooms. As an ELL teacher, how do you make that work? I mean, obviously these children are all learning English, but how do you work with students with such different backgrounds?
That's where a differentiation comes in. Like I said, we base ourselves on the ELPA, on the test, the screener that we get, and taking the test into consideration, a student may have some skills or not skills. So if the student has very, very low skills, for example, in my case, I teach literacy. What I do is work with the standard that is in the curriculum, and we try to work that standard to the student's level.
You mentioned students coming to your classroom from Guatemala and other Central American countries. Do you find that as you listen to the news and you learn about the migrant crisis going on at our southern border right now, do you find that the students that make their way to your classroom mirror what you're hearing in the news? Are they a sort of a cross-section of students and people who are coming from these countries?
And yes, I know. For example, I was teaching summer. In middle school, a lot of the children are a little bit more of saving face, and so it takes a while before we develop those relationships with them, because right now my sixth graders are totally new to me. And so it takes a while before they feel comfortable and open up about situations that they may have at home where they, you know, feel the immigration crisis as a threat or as something that affects them emotionally. With the older students, the ones that are in 7th and 8th grade, in most cases they will confidentially, you know, share with you situations where a relative or somebody that they know is having a situation. And so as an EL teacher, it's my job to also support them in the emotional setting, not only in the academic setting, but also in the emotional.
Living with the kinds of challenges that we're hearing about with migrants who are coming from South America, so many of those challenges would make it very difficult to learn. Do you find that you need to offer the emotional support so children can learn in what they feel is a safe environment?
Definitely. It is very difficult, like you just said, to learn when you are afraid, when you are hiding, when you are constantly thinking of your parent or a sibling or whoever they live with, grandpa, grandma, an uncle, an aunt, a cousin. It makes it a huge challenge. And our job as teachers, not only the EL teachers, but every teacher, is to give the students the safety net. Depending on the situations, they keep a lot to themselves because they're afraid of saying something that will get the family in a problem. So in my particular case, I tell the students that we're here to help them. And academically, if they need to stay after school to get the support or we need to repeat the lesson, we will. So it's offering them that extra opportunity.
When we hear news reports or read or see news reports on television about the migrant crisis, so often all of these human beings are reduced to numbers or trends. What do you want people to know about your students as people?
I want to make sure that people understand that our students are coming from different backgrounds. They have different levels of values and different levels of understanding, in realizing that we are dealing with children. We are dealing with people that are in need of support, in need of help. And many of these children are very beautiful people, very sweet, very, very gentle, and very accommodating as far as that they actually want to learn. They are thirsty for knowledge. They appreciate their knowledge.
Anafix, thank you so much.
Anafix
teaches English language learners at George Washington Carver Academy in Waterloo, Iowa. And with me now is David Castles Johnson, Associate Professor of Foreign Language and ESL Education at the University of Iowa. And Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
We were just talking about how things look in Waterloo, where approximately 10% of the students in the district are English language learners. In a few minutes, we're going to take a closer look at Denison, Iowa, where over half of the students in that district are English language learners. And there are a few communities around the state like Denison where we've seen incredible growth. Can you give me an overview of how we've been seeing this need grow in Iowa in the last few years?
Sure. So if you look at, let's say, the last 20 years, 20 years ago, there were about 1.8% of the student population were classified as English language learners. That number's grown to about 6.5% of the student population last year. So that doesn't seem like a lot. And in fact, Iowa still is well below national norms in terms of linguistic diversity in its schools. But there has been an increase of about 250% over the past 20 years. Although, as you said, in places like Denison, that the numbers have skyrocketed. I mean, it's they've went from around no English language learners a decade ago to more than 50% English language learners in their classrooms. So in some contexts, there's been rapid growth. In other contexts, the number of English language learners has remained somewhat steady. So a community like West Liberty, for example, which has had Spanish speakers in its community for many years, many years. So,
with students coming in to districts, of course, there are teachers who have been trained to teach English language learners. But, of course, these students are also in classrooms with teachers who may not have that background. Tell me a little bit about the challenge of making sure these students' needs are met.
Yeah, we hope they have teachers who have been trained to teach them. But Iowa is not unique in this regard. It's definitely a challenge, a problem throughout the country, accommodating English language learners in classrooms with teachers who are qualified to teach them. I mean, so you imagine as a teacher with these students, you have to think about both. Traditionally, teachers just think about content area needs. I need to teach math, I need to teach social studies, etc. But these students have specific linguistic needs that are not easily accommodated with just your typical teaching techniques. So it's not, in other words, it can't just be about good teaching. If you can be the best teacher in the world and still not be accommodating your English language learners. So it's really a challenge of it's about equal educational opportunity. This is according to the Supreme Court, a civil rights issue. So in 1974, the Lowe v. Nichols unanimous Supreme Court decision said that any student who doesn't speak English as their first language and is receiving the same instruction as their native English-speaking peers is receiving unequal instruction, and the school district is violating their civil rights. So all school districts in Iowa, most school districts around the country, have what they call a Lowe plan, because it's a litigious issue and people don't want to get sued, understandably. So part of it is, I think there are two things going on at least. One is that you want to accommodate the students that Anna was talking about, both emotionally, pedagogically, but also that's the carrot, I suppose. But the stick is that there's a litigious component to this. That is, if a school district doesn't, they're at risk of a lawsuit.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about teaching English language learners in Iowa. With me, David Castles Johnson, Associate Professor of Foreign Language and ESL Education at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In about 15 minutes, I'll talk with Morgan Russell about what it's like to train for a marathon with type 1 diabetes. But right now, we're talking about teaching English language learners in Iowa. Teaching English language learners has become a vital part of what our schools do. We've seen tremendous growth in the number of students who need English as a second language services in their schools. In some communities, we've seen truly amazing growth, and one of those communities is Denison, Iowa. More than half of the students in the school district are English language learners. And with me joining the conversation is Heather Langenfeld, Director of Elementary School Improvement and Director of ELL Services in the Denison Community School District. Hello, Heather.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And also still with us, David Castles Johnson, Associate Professor of Foreign Language and ESL Education at the University of Iowa. Heather, help us understand Denison a little bit. We have seen tremendous growth in Denison. It's a small town that has been growing instead of shrinking, bucking the trends in many ways in Iowa. And that's thanks in large part to immigrants who've come to Denison because of opportunities there. So tell me a little bit about some of the changes we've seen in the schools.
Sure, you're exactly right. I was the only ELL teacher in the district just over 20 years ago, and now over half of our student population qualify for ELL services. We have packing plants in town, approximately four of them that we have had in town over the past 20 years, and also a lot of neighboring districts that also have packing plants. But those families are choosing to live in Denison, which is why we're seeing the increase of numbers in our school district.
And in those early days, as the numbers started to grow, most of the people coming to Denison were Spanish speakers. But you've seen things change over the years. Give me an idea of the kind of diversity of places people are coming from.
Sure. We have approximately 23 languages that are spoken in our district at this point in time. A large majority of them are still coming from Spanish-speaking countries, just like Anna said, from Waterloo, Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. Those areas are what makes up a large majority of our students. But we're also seeing many refugees coming from Africa and parts of Asia. So that has been a drastic change for us when you're used to dealing with one language and now dealing with 23 languages.
Yeah, give me an idea of some of the programs that are available in Denison schools, because as you mentioned, with so many Spanish speakers coming, you have developed what's called a dual language program. Tell me about that.
Correct. So we have two different tracks for our ELL students that we have in our district. ELL services, so most of our ELL services, like Anna said, are through co-teaching. So our ELL teachers actually push in and work with the classroom teachers to create smaller group sizes for our students in math and literacy especially. And then we also started this past year, so we're just starting year two, for a dual language program in our kindergarten, first and second grade. And what that looks like is half of the students are made up of primarily Spanish-speaking students, and the other half have a primary language of English. So we actually have our Spanish-speaking students learning English and Spanish, and our English-speaking students learning Spanish and English. And that's something that came as a board goal from our school board. They really see the need for our English-speaking students to have the advantage, just like our ELL students have, of being bilingual and biliterate. And they want that for the English-speaking students, too, which I think has been a very successful program. And it's amazing to go in and see these little kindergarten, first and second graders, and what they're picking up in both languages.
How has the community responded to that? Have you seen a lot of native English speakers excited about enrolling their children in the dual language program?
Yes, they've been ecstatic. In fact, over the past 2 years, we have a wait list. So we have 48 slots at each grade level. And it's based off a lottery, so there's nothing that's first come, first serve about it. But through that lottery process, then we select 24 English-speaking students and 24 students that speak another language, sometimes Spanish. We do have a couple of other students in there that they're actually learning their third language, so that's very exciting for us. But then through that, there are many students that don't get into the program, and the English side waitlist was actually longer for us than the Spanish side waitlist this year. So it's been very well accepted within the community.
Well, and this is a similar program has been going on for many years now in the West Liberty School District,
yes,
which, of course, is in eastern Iowa. And David, I want to bring you back into the conversation here. I know that the growth of dual language programs is something that you've been researching and encouraging as well. Tell me more about why you see these programs as so valuable.
Well, we see it as, as Heather was saying, as a really good way to provide equal educational opportunity for these students, and to bring in the linguistic resources that are in the community into the classroom to the advantage of both the kids who speak English as their first language and the kids who speak some other language. And so these programs in Iowa are all Spanish-English programs, but in other parts of the country, I've seen Chinese programs, there are Russian programs. The research about these programs and the relative effectiveness of different language educational programs has shown over the years that students in bilingual education programs, and in particular dual language education programs, outperform, or at least the programs allow those students statistically to reach the level of their native English speaking peers, and in many cases exceed it. So whereas the other ESL programs and other different types of bilingual education programs, and I would classify dual language as a type of bilingual education, there are other types, don't necessarily do that. So we've seen it as a very solid educational model, and I think that that's why it's gained so much traction. I think one of the other reasons it's gained so much traction is that it focuses on English speakers, and as Heather says, this is not an uncommon story for there to be a wait list in these programs. We've seen this in many different parts of the countries where the native English-speaking parents put their kids, they want their kids to go to the schools. That kind of support, helps to spread the popularity of these programs.
Absolutely. And I want to drill down into what you were just saying about how this improves the academic performance of the English language learners, this kind of program. Let's talk about academic performance among English language learners. What are some of the real challenges? Because a lot of these students, they're not just dealing with the challenge of not speaking English. Many of them have gaps in education or have been part of a very different kind of educational system. So what kind of outcomes are we seeing with more traditional approaches to ELL? Dave?
Well, I don't think we're looking at it in Iowa. I think one of the biggest challenges in the educational landscape right now for these students is all of the tests. So if you give a student a test that's supposed to test them in math, but they're not native English speakers, that test ends up becoming a language test as well, even though math is supposed to be the universal language. But let's say a social studies or whatever other kind of test, if you're testing the linguistic skills of the student as well as the content that you're trying to test, the results of the test actually become invalid. Nonetheless, these tests are very important for schools and school districts, and then they're evaluated based on the test scores. The students do come from many different places, speaking different languages, from different cultures, different educational cultures. Part of the challenges for teachers is to socialize the kids into schooling in the U.S. So there are particular kinds of things that kids do in classes that we think are very normal or natural for us who grew up in the U.S., like raising your hand when you have a question or getting in line to do stuff. These are not traditions everywhere in the world. So kids have to be socialized not just into they need to be socialized not just in the pedagogical content of what they're being taught, but all the classroom routines that we sort of take for granted, the way teachers ask questions, the way that students are expected to negotiate with one another. All of these things are sort of culturally dependent. If you grew up with it, you think it's just the way that it is. But classrooms all over the world operate very differently.
Maybe you can give us some insight, Heather, having been in the classroom and how you see this playing out in Denison. What are some of the challenges you had to overcome as a teacher?
Sure. We have a lot of challenges that we see from students coming in with lack of schooling. That's a new issue that we're dealing with this year. Some of our high school students that haven't been in school since second grade. So really it is trying to find programming that works best for them, but like David said, making them feel comfortable in the buildings and helping them acclimate to just life in the United States and in a different type of schooling that they're used to or that they haven't had previously to being in school here. Really working with our teachers to find where the gaps are and help fill in those gaps. So that might mean through some extra study halls that we can provide for them throughout the day or coming in before or after school. Just doing anything we can to make them feel comfortable and help them know that if they have any questions or wherever they feel that they need more support, that we can offer that for them.
When students come in who would age-wise be in a secondary level of education, but education level is more like a primary level of education, how do you approach that? Where do you place that student?
Right. So we always look at age and we place them grade appropriately. We would never want to take a student and place them in a lower grade just because of lack of schooling. It's much more important to us that they are with their like peers as far as age goes to make sure that they feel comfortable here and then support to build up those skills in whatever it is, math, reading, science, social studies, to help them gain those skills then that they can remain with their friends.
We talk a lot about graduation rates when we have any conversation about education in this country. With English language learners in Denison, how do you approach that idea? I mean, if you're coming into secondary education and you've missed so many years, is graduating from high school a reasonable goal?
Correct. And that actually is a conversation that I was just having with our high school principal and our superintendent on Friday. The students that come in usually as freshmen, we have no problems getting them the credits that they need in order to graduate as long as they don't have a lack of schooling that's significant. And I would say significant of the past 2 to 3 years, we can usually still get those kids in the program and get them graduated by the time they turn 21 because they can actually stay in until they're 21 years old. So it's looking at the students that now haven't been in school since second grade that addition, subtraction, anything with math, they don't read or write in their primary language, that's where we're starting to see more difficulty. And then really sitting with those kids and helping them figure out what is their goal, because a realistic goal probably isn't for them to graduate from high school, but then can we help them find a different track, whether that's workforce or getting a GED or programs like that, that still help them be a successful and contributing adult in society.
So many challenges. And Dave, when you're listening to Heather talk about these challenges, I know that you've looked at this in your research as well. And you were talking about the requirement for educational parity. So how can schools achieve equality in education when the students are coming in with some of these incredible disadvantages?
Yeah, but I think this, you know, what we've seen when we work with Iowa educators is they're doing a good job with what they're given. I think that the biggest challenge right now probably is a lack of political will in Des Moines to first recognize that there's this need for these students to be accommodated, and then also to fund it. I mean, it's often a matter of money. I mean, we have teacher shortages in the state in ESL, ELL, and bilingual education teaching. And so there needs to be a recognition and then in some policy initiatives pushed forward that would help improve the situation, to give the support to the teachers and the educators in these schools, because they're already working hard and well on the problems. You know, you can tell by both of the people that you're talking to. So, but we need some policy and financial support, really. I should say, too, that, I mean, we keep talking about, I just want to add before we run out of time, but we keep talking about this increase in linguistic diversity as if it's something new. But in fact, you know, I mean, the name of our state is named after an indigenous language, which was very common here before it was colonized. There were at least 5 or 6 or 7 different indigenous languages spoken in Iowa at one point. German was very common throughout because there were a lot of German immigration here. But because of language policies, which effectively eradicated both the indigenous languages and German, actually, there was an anti-foreign language policy called the Babel Proclamation in the early 20th century, which got rid of a lot of those programs. So we do talk about there is new immigration and it's bringing linguistic diversity, but there is a history of linguistic diversity and discrimination in the state of Iowa that I do think we should recognize.
Absolutely. And in your research, you mentioned that Iowa may not have as large a population of English language learners or per capita as some other states. Are you seeing other states? Are there other states that are doing this well, doing this better? Do we have a best practices we can look to?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think there are states that have, you know, had programs for a longer period of time. I think a state like Texas and a state like Texas, which requires all of their pre-service teachers to get training and working with these students. So here it's an optional add-on endorsement. It's a popular endorsement at the University of Iowa, and we would like some people to apply, keep applying, but it's still popular. So we're doing well. Because there's such a need in the state of Iowa and many different places. But I do think there are other states like California and Texas and New York that are sort of ahead of us in terms of developing programs and models and pedagogical techniques that accommodate these students and giving the teachers the type of professional development and training they need to accommodate these students.
Heather and Dennison, do you have a hard time hiring enough teachers with an ESL endorsement?
We have had success hiring ESL teachers in Denison purely for the fact of we have, because of our large population, a lot of our classroom teachers go and get their ESL endorsements. I would say we probably have about 40 teachers on staff that either have their endorsement or are currently working towards it. So a lot of times those teachers are willing to step into those roles just for a different change. But we had a good pool. I think we had 5 different applicants this last year to hire, to choose from, to fill one of our spots. So while it's not like the Des Moines metro areas and stuff like that that have hundreds of applications, for us, I felt like that was a good pool for us.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
We struggle more trying to find dual language teachers on the Spanish side right now. So we've been working a lot with our high school and students that have gone off to college and are in education programs, getting them to come back. So kind of the grow your own program.
Right. Dave, we've talked just briefly about shortages, but that must be encouraging to hear a nice pool of applicants in Denison.
That's great. And I think that, as she said, the real challenge in the state right now is hiring, especially in dual language programs, folks who can teach on the Spanish side. A lot of times, I think, in dual language programs, we rely on certified teachers who speak Spanish. But, of course, just because you speak a language doesn't necessarily – I'm not trying to denigrate the good work that everyone's doing, but just because you speak English, I mean, that's what we do with all of our ESL endorsement students is to talk about, just because teaching the language is different than speaking it. So, yeah.
Very much so, yes.
Heather Langenfeld, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Heather Langenfeld, Director of Elementary School Improvement and Director of ELL Services in the Denison Community School District. David Castles-Johnson, thank you.
Thank you.
David Castles-Johnson, Associate Professor of Foreign Language and ESL Education at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.